We're here at Small Batch Coffee in Jubilee Street in Brighton. It's still early days in Brighton Fringe, and I'm going to interview Duncan Henderson, who just got an outstanding review from Fringe Review for the Polished Scar. Duncan, in my years of interviewing, I often ask what I think is quite an innocent question, but I always say, when did you start acting? And people say, well, actually, I was originally an estate agent or an accountant, you know, or so on. Is there any truth in the rumour that you were an engineer?
There is. It's completely true. Well, I did a degree in mechanical engineering, which was a sandwich course. So I actually worked in industry for a year, but the moment I finished the degree, I jumped ship.
Okay, well, can you build me a believable bridge between engineering and acting?
No, I'm not sure there is one. Yeah. I think there are... Probably. No, there are going to be aspects in the construction of a performance, but that's really technical. They're opposite sides of the brain, aren't they?
Yeah. But was there a clear moment where you go, no, this isn't what I'm doing, and I know what else I'm doing? Or was that a process of, you know, awkward discovery?
No, I always wanted to be an actor, but the people around me whose opinion I respected, when I said, you know, what do you think? They went, well, I'm not so sure about that, and it's a dangerous... challenging professional, it's not fair, you know, you're unprepared for that, take the safe option. So I followed the safe option and realised that really wasn't for me. So people say, oh, it's amazingly brave, becoming an actor after you're an engineer, leaving that career, and it wasn't brave at all, it was just the only thing I could do.
Okay, so in your case, I mean, you sort of pulled the canvas aside, there was a fresher one underneath and you did that, because I meet a lot of people in the overcrowded world of the arts. Lots of people in what I call a not job, which is they're doing this because they're just not going to do that anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, I am still involved in creation of stuff because I do a thing called Workhouse, which is in Hove, which is a creative group of people and artists. Creative people and artists.
That's very well put.
So crafts and there are business, normal sort of standard office based businesses there as well, but it's a community of creatives, and there I work with wood and metal and we build stuff, and so you know, I am ticking some of the interest boxes I had when I was a mechanical engineer, or I was attracted to it in the first place, like, you know, ergonomics, aesthetics and design. I'm just not working from an office in a suit.
Has Brighton been a good base for that? Because a lot of people, I remember a guy called Oz Mansions, God rest his soul, who introduced me to a term called wretched contentment, that Brighton's a very creative place, but you won't really earn much of a living here.
I think you struggle to earn much of a living doing that kind of thing anywhere, really, but I think Brighton does embrace it. I think Sussex is a hotbed of cottage industry, isn't it? And I think it's a great place to be for that. People don't, you know, they don't tread on your dreams here so readily. Yeah. I would say, yeah.
Okay. How many Bitcoin have you got?
None.
Okay. In terms of your autobiography yet to be written, can you give me some of the chapter headings?
Oh, jeez. No, I can't. Look at them.
Does it read as a happy autobiography from the point of view of being an actor? I thought I was just going to ask you to PR your show, didn't you?
It's a wonderful show, and I'm glad you brought it up. Oh, Jesus! I think I'm a fairly happy man. I get quite angry sometimes. My childhood was a relatively happy childhood. I think I was quite lonely, but I think most children are. You know, I don't think there's anything unusual about my life at all. I'm enjoying my life now. I really do. Yeah, I love living in Brighton, actually. A lot of people talk about where they're going to go next, and my wife, Joanna Rosenfeld, who is, you know, asking about the show, co-created the show with me and directed it, she asked me, you know, where do you want to go next? And I said, I haven't even started here yet. And I believe that. I think there's a lot to do here.
And did you mention her just now, out of pride or fear or both?
Can I say both?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah. I'm amazingly proud of her. Her creative work and her support is fantastic. And when I was doing, starting writing this guy, it really came quite quickly, and then it just stopped altogether. And it was her that showed me the ways of how to get going again from her experience of creating one-woman shows.
And in terms of that kind of work, I've seen you in dialogue work, I've seen you in comedy. What particular challenges has this play brought to you?
Well, writing it for a kick-off.
Okay, well, take me through that a bit first. What did that look like if we followed you around with secret cameras?
It's all in my head. It's not very interesting for a camera.
Okay, so what are we seeing you, like sitting in Starbucks with a coffee and not actually... You're writing it in your head.
I'm probably lying in bed writing in my head, so it's quite dark as well. It's in the same way I was an engineer, actually. I would do all my designs in my head. There was never anything on paper, which probably wasn't very good. Someone said that the script is quite cinematic, of the play, the construction of it, and I think that's probably right. It took me by surprise, but thinking about it since. I do visualise stuff quite clearly and probably a bit like an engineer, actually. And hopefully, it's probably Joanna gives it a bit more heart, actually, afterwards.
So does that mean you have to show what's in your head and then she can move it around because there isn't a script to just read off the page?
Well, there was a script, but it was very clear. I mean, I wrote it in final draft and I didn't actually shift it into a stage format. I did it because the automatic one is film, and I just used that, and that worked. So that would probably suggest that it is filmic as well. It kind of sounds so wanky, but it sort of wrote itself, this thing. I thought about what I wanted to show, aspects of this man's genesis, creation, where he ends up, what I thought was important, what I thought was pivotal in his formation, and best ways to illustrate where we end up with this man, what it produces. And obviously a couple of those ideas weren't good and they got ditched, but on the whole it pretty much came straight, which is great, but probably the next time I ever try and write something, it's going to be a nightmare because it's not going to.
Do you find it easy to ditch ideas?
No, I really don't.
The reason I asked you that is because you particularly use the language "it got ditched," rather than, you know, "we ditched it" or "I ditched it."
Or murdering your children.
Yeah.
No, I was a... Because this is my first proper writing venture, I was aware that it might not go well, and I need to take the advice of people around me that have done it. And so I was prepared for them to say, "This is crap, get rid of it."
Right.
Much more than if I was doing something that I... Yeah, if I was working just as an actor and I'd come in with loads of really good ideas, or so I thought, and I wanted to put up, and the director just went, "What you're doing here is abominable, stop all of it," I would really, really struggle with that.
Yeah, and I guess in my dialogue with solo performers that have also written their own work, it almost splits itself in two. There's a bunch of actors who literally go, "I lock myself away, you know, I look in a mirror, and, you know, what do you mean, the director?" And there's a bunch of others for whom they could never do that because... they absolutely need another viewpoint in the room and an influential one that they trust. And it sounds like, you know, in your phase of development now, you absolutely need someone else in the room.
I'm not even sure I was aware just how much I did need someone else. But at the same time, because we live together, there was very little, "Right, we're going to have a meeting here." It would just come up over a coffee or whatever, or... yeah, it was very casual. So I didn't really feel like it was actor-director. It wasn't actor-director, actually, because to start off with, she wasn't directing at all. She was just giving me stimulus every now and then to help create the script. And then when something wasn't working, we went to the Rialto, and she just gave me a couple of... subjects to improvise around, and I improvised around them. I used work that I'd already thought about and half written, but it was her saying, "Right, go down this road, do that." So, I mean, she's sort of dramaturg is more what she did until right at the end when it was like, right, now we have to, let's just do this properly or normally.
But also, that sounds like one of the recipes for disaster is if she doesn't dramaturg or somebody doesn't, because you end up directing something that could be, you know, not ready really to be directed.
Are you suggesting that dramaturgs, there's a place for dramaturgs in British theatre?
Well, dramaturgs do, for sure. But, you know, dramaturgy is misunderstood by a lot of people.
So
but I'd say no more than solo performers that have written their own work and have kind of, you know, so identified with it, you know, they don't quite know who they are.
I think dramaturgs are great. I think they have a really important place. And they should be in pretty much every production. There is certainly a large production with loads of heads.
I guess I'm not prying here, but, you know, do you have ground rules at home? You're not sort of talking about this stuff in bed, are you?
We don't have ground rules, and we don't talk about it in bed. She goes to bed much earlier than I do and is fast asleep. We're very open with each other, with our communication, generally, so it's not a problem. But I don't know. Yeah, we also have egos that we struggle with as well. So, you know, like any relationship, and so we're, and at times it was a bit intense because we were doing this and living at home and had kids. So yeah, it was a bit much, and you think at those moments, oh, I'm not sure I want to do this again.
And now it's in a mode of repetition and going to perform in lots of different places. Have you let go of that script, or are you still finding a part of you going, oh, no, I need to rewrite that now? And, you know, how much of this is now ready and done, and you're just there to play the part?
It's ready and done, and I am playing the part. But if I think of something, a better way of saying something, if I do, I will, you know. Yeah, of course I will. Why wouldn't I? I can. I'm allowed.
You are. That's true. You are allowed.
Yeah, no one's going to stop me. Well, one person might, but they can't actually gag me.
Yeah. Is this now doable by another human being?
Yeah. You can get it on a piece of paper if you want.
Yeah. Have you written this with that in mind, that it's, you know yourself more or less well, but solo performers can also write absolutely with themselves in mind, and you're unique, so would it be as easy to hand over to another actor, or would you have to rewrite it a bit?
I think some actors may get it and go, this is a bit thin. The style of the piece is that I'm speaking to loads of other people in conversation. But the script doesn't have, or used to in most places, but it doesn't have what anyone else is saying. So you could translate this to mean all sorts of things if you put it in what other people... So... Yeah, and we've also paired it right down with there's very little furniture. There are no props. There's no costume changes. It's really bare black box theatre. So I think a lot of people would find it a bit thin. But I am by no means a unique actor. So loads of people, I'm sure, pick it up and do it. Yeah.
For performers who are considering a solo show for the first time, that bare, pared back, bare, minimalist black box theatre that doesn't give you any props or set to, you know, lean on, what do you think someone thinking about doing this for the first time should consider? It doesn't sound easy.
I think it depends which way you come at it. I think a lot of people find all that a bit cluttering, having lots of things to... I mean, some people hide behind it, I imagine, and some people are very... reassured by having a cup and saucer in their hand that they can tinkle as they consider their next line. I think each to their own. Personally, I really like storytelling done simply, because then you can rely on the listener or viewer's mind doing loads of the work, and that's where the excitement is, I think.
So minimalism isn't the new form of clutter then? I'm only kidding. That was not a serious question. So you haven't got any Bitcoin?
No, I don't really even know what Bitcoin is.
Okay. Have you got a PhD?
No.
Okay. But I did look this up. If you get a PhD, you have to defend it. And the thing that you mostly have to defend is you've got to prove that you've made an original contribution to knowledge.
Right.
So what does the polished scar add to the world that wasn't there before?
I think I want to have the dialogue about how we have these men, because it is mainly men, running our world. Where do they come from? This creature, this form of creature that can appear to act with impunity. And without responsibility, without recourse, it's just the... It's infuriating. And they can make as many mistakes as they like, half apologise and carry on blissfully. And it's agonising. And it started off as a sort of angry shout, and then I realised, no, an angry shout is really easily dismissed. So I want to actually be a bit more objective about this. And I think it's tragic that we are creating these animals, these people that, and these besuited animals that behave in the way that they do. But I don't think they're very human. They're certainly not humane. And why we continue to accept them? I wish I had the time to address that in the piece, but that's, I think, a different script. But if a couple of people come out and go, actually, we have to stop accepting this, then that might be a start, mightn't it? I don't know.
Well, I guess you can go back to, one of the kind of aims of some of Brecht's work was to be educational. It was to generate a social dialogue.
Yeah.
And one definition of alienation is that audiences sit there watching you, suddenly you go, shit, that's me.
Yeah.
And then they're able to see themselves, and they sort of like, themself is over there, and they're looking at them, and that's an alienation, which you want, in a way, a healthy one. How well do you... I mean, because you can get an outstanding review in theatre, people can be blown over, but you seem to have a social goal there, a slightly disruptive goal, to get people thinking about this and talking about this. Do you think you're succeeding in that?
Well, we're talking about it.
Yeah, certainly we are.
Here we are. And you say I got the outstanding review... And I felt that the reviewer there had felt something about the subject that I was looking at. Yeah. Not just, they were just quoting what I'd said.
Yeah.
And there have been other people that have written things online that have said exactly the same thing. Well, not exactly the same, but the same theme. There was a chap there who I think did a lot of work with Mankind Project, who was recognising parts of it too. So, yeah, I hope it is speaking to people in the way that I'd hoped.
I guess people like Augusto Boal and Forum Theatres would say, if that's your aim, well, you sort of need to leap out at some point and say, well, let's talk about this. What did you think?
Right. You think so?
I don't know. It's just that is one possible aim of theatre, is that people go and privately talk about it, but the other one is theatre opens the door to actually start to
find someone to facilitate those workshops then. Because that's not something I think I'm qualified to do.
Yeah. But are you interested to know what those conversations might be when everyone's gone home? Or are you just an actor?
I'm a turn. I do feel like it. I'm one of the actors that are reluctant to leave the dressing room and go into the bar, if that answers your question. Yeah. I'm fascinated to hear what other people think. I mean, that... school reunions, that kind of thing. It's just... maybe this illustrates it. I'd love to know what everyone that I've ever met is doing now and how their life has been, but I quake at the thought of sitting with each of them and talking. I'm just not that
gregarious, but I'd love them to sit in a mastermind chair, me in the darkness, and listen to them all.
Yeah. But also saying how you've impacted on them.
Oh, God, no! I don't need that. God, really? Do you need that?
I don't know. I suppose the danger is that a lot of theatre in the West and in England is quite polemic. You know, it says what it says and then it vanishes to say it to another bunch of people.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, other cultures, you can see them sitting around the cafe table having huge arguments, you know, and discussing things. And the Theatre of the Oppressed of South America was about waking up the whole town through theatre. So I suppose I'm prodding you that if you've got a star show on your hands but a social aim, you know, scuttling off to your dressing room until they've all left might sell it short.
I think I'm a bit shy with it, aren't I? Yes, I wrote this to start a dialogue, so I hope that people are discussing it. I wish I was the person that could come out and say, right, let's discuss this. Do we all agree? Who's got some pitchforks and who's got the torches? But I would love to have an effect. Do you know someone that can do all the fighting?
Well, I charge quite a lot for that, actually.
Well, how much, you know.
Yeah, we'll take that offline, mate.
You need a really good fighter.
And you have to pay me in Bitcoin. But you know, the other night, a rousing applause, you know, a big audience loved it, and that can happen again and again. What's going on then, as you hear that appreciation for you and Joanna's work? What's happening in the 5 minutes before you're in the dressing room, you go on stage, and what's happening in the 5 minutes when you've fled back to the dressing room?
The 5 minutes before... I don't really try to think about it that much, and I want to remind myself to have a laugh, to enjoy myself, because you can't... I can't sit and think about, right, remember, you've got a message. Get out there. Tell them that message. At the most... I suppose you're a storyteller, go out and tell a good story, engage, be engaged. But you can't force these things, can you? You just have to step on and go. Yeah,
but you're not doing some horrendous physical warm-up or checking your Bitcoin price.
I might do some light stretching and jogging. Yeah. But no, I'm fortunate in this regard because it's a fairly still show, so I don't have to do a great deal of warm-up. I'll do a vocal warm-up. Of course I will, you know. I'm a pro. Yeah.
And then afterwards, I mean, do you put this character away in a box?
Probably not. I don't think there's any set response to what I do after a show. I'll do whatever happens.
Yeah, but I guess the concept that way madness lies is you can't assemble all these characters and have them just haunting your head as you head around Morrison's.
No, I'm not going to do that.
I'm very impressed.
I'm not the tortured artist who carries his creatures around with him. I probably don't think that deeply. There's other things vying for my attention in my brain.
Yeah. And is that your next project? Do they overlap, or do you sort of end this and then have a period in the wilderness before you find the next idea?
I'll finish this and I'll go and do something else that is in no way theatre-based.
Right.
But I will be thinking, you know, if something comes up theatre-based, I could do that next too. There is no rhyme or reason or order that I intend to follow.
Just based on what you've been saying about men, would you rather play Baron Hardup in your next panto then, or Cinderella?
Oh, God, I would have to go with Cinderella, only because it would be a bit of a stretch. Baron Hardup, he's a sweet fella, isn't he? But it's not many onions there, is there?
No, but in this terrible world that, you know, we've all been reporting in the news, Cinderella's probably going to be paid less, even if she's got more lines.
I don't get paid anything. Money's not an issue.
Yeah.
Not for acting. Yeah.
Where do you see yourself, say, 10 years from now?
I don't think that far ahead. I never have. I've never thought about that sort of thing. Anyway, it could be anywhere. I don't know. Maybe quite likely here. It's been 20 years.
Let me offer you a few things, okay? You're in politics.
No, I'm really not in politics. That wouldn't happen. The way they'll pick on anything to destroy someone's career. There's a wardrobe full for almost anyone I know.
Yeah.
No one's got a chance.
Okay. An Uber driver.
No, that wouldn't work either. I might cycle people around on a bike, but not in a taxi.
Okay, you're back in engineering.
Why can't I carry on doing what I'm doing?
You can.
All right. Yeah. Now, again, the world has moved on. Okay. Engineering has moved on. It's left me behind.
Okay. So you're an actor still?
Well, I'm an actor, but I am... I mean, the next... You know, I want to do it all. That's the problem. I've got too many fingers and too many pies, too many interests, and I just like doing it all. Yeah, I really enjoyed the writing of the play. And if something else strikes me, I'd like to do that again. But yeah, writing generally is fun. I suppose I haven't done much of it because I've not felt very confident about my writing. So this, I suppose, will give me a little boost. But creating generally, I just like making things, be it theatre, be it bikes, be it furniture, be it houses, be it, you know, it's just bread.
And it does sound to me with this project that if, say, a couple of years from now, you're in a cafe like this and a couple of people come up to you, and this happens more than once, and say, are you Duncan Henderson? I saw your play at Brighton Fringe, The Polished Scar, and someone says, I saw it in Edinburgh, wherever it went to, and just to let you know, we were talking about it all night, and we all had a bit of an argument about some of it, but thank you for that play. How does that feel?
That would be brilliant. That would just be brilliant.
Yeah.
And rare.
And then finally... there are lots of people that may come and see this play, and often fringe festivals vie for attention, so they've got the publicity and they Google some of the reviews to decide if to see something. But this can be a really silent period now, and this, as an answer, you may say nothing, or you can just say whatever comes into your head. As I ask you to look at The Polished Scar now, you've just played it, there it is. Just what comes into your mind and what comes into your heart about it?
I think it's honest. I think it's got integrity. I think we've made it for the right reasons, whatever they are. But I think it feels I think we've given it everything we can, and there won't be any regrets or shame around it, I don't think. I'll be sorry if people don't come to see it, but you know, the making of the thing is the thing. And if people choose to come and enjoy it, then that's great. I can't actually do any more. And I'm not a producer, you know, I'm the turn.
Duncan Henderson, thanks for talking to Fringe Review.